Blog Talk Radio.
Let me tell you about something new. A new show called G's Power.
G's Power.
Real talk for real saints.
Are you ready?
And it's for real.
Welcome to G's Power Hour, live every weekday at 11:30 a.m. on Never Had It So Good Entertainment Network. Your host, G, will bring you informative and entertaining guests and a variety of topics in a way that you can absorb and enjoy. Listen in weekdays and call in at 516-387-1944. We love interaction. All shows can be downloaded if you miss one or found on iTunes the next day. G's Power Hour is powered by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network.
G's Power Hour.
Yeah. Good morning, brothers and sisters, kings and queens, angels and saints, ladies and gentlemen. Happy Friday Eve and welcome to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. And we didn't threaten, we promised that we would be back, and we are. Ladies and gentlemen, the mighty, mighty CEO of Never Had It So Good Entertainment, Princess Cooper. Good morning and welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you. I like that intro, Gretchen, with the music going down at the end, and you came in with so much energy. I like that. I like that. You are a busy woman, and I want to start with that.
We are
busy
women.
That's where I want to start. Yeah. Yeah.
We are busy women.
I wouldn't have it any other way.
No, me neither. I don't know what I would do. I'd probably lose my mind, although it might already be gone. But that's all right. That's all right.
That's another subject for another day.
That's that hyperthyroidism kicking in right about now. I just got my level. They're not good. But
amen.
It is what it is.
Amen. You know what, Gretchen, off-air listeners, they said Gretchen said I could start wherever I wanted to start.
Yes.
And
yes.
You know, Gretchen, I want to actually start something we didn't talk about off the air. Is I went to a funeral yesterday. My best friend's mom passed, and she was 74. She battled cancer the past year and a half, stomach cancer, and she left us last Thursday. She got her wings, and no more suffering. But I guess I just wanted to start with that because we as women have to go through that journey and that journey of losing our mom and having that baton passed to us to carry on the legacy. And I got to see that up close yesterday, and it was just as powerful as it was just seeing it through my eyes with my mom. But I just wanted to mention that because I know that you have had that baton passed to you and the legacy still lives on, and Mama would be proud. I know she would be proud of you, but I just wanted to mention that first.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I never knew what my mom was thinking until, like, years down the road. You know, that was a funny thing. I didn't realize how much it meant to her when I got my first apartment until she talked about it later. And she and I guess another cousin of mine, an older cousin that I was close to, and they said they were talking about how when they were my age, you know, the idea of, you know, I guess a young single black woman getting her own first apartment so early, because I was, you know, it was right after college. And I decided I went to the University of South Florida in Tampa. I decided to stay in Tampa. So I was doing some work already, and I got some more work, and I decided, because I was thinking about going for my master's, which I didn't, which is fine. I don't believe you should be spending that kind of money going for higher education if you're not sure what you're going for, okay? Mm-hmm. And my thing was I wasn't sure what I was going for. But the thing is that she mentioned down the road how they had talked about me getting my own apartment and working and everything and just doing so well away from home. And I was like, I just thought it was the logical next step. I thought it was expected. You know, you graduate college, you go to work, you get a job, you know, you get a place to stay. I just thought that was the next step. I didn't think it was that big of a deal. I just thought it was expected. So it's just interesting, especially, I guess, because my mom was kind of depression era child, you know. So you know, the things that happened to them and the things that were expected were just, I guess, a little bit different, you know. But it's kind of good because that means that there was a progression, and she made it happen, you know, both my
yeah.
parents.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
So,
and
Keith,
I think
what is your friend's mom's name?
Michelle Henley is my best friend, and her mom is Mary McKee. And Mary was an usher at church, and the service was centered around that. Yesterday, the usher board gave a plaque and talked about how well she greeted people into the house of the Lord, and it was just really a good thing. And the pastor at the end, he said, "You see those young men back there on the back row with those phones?" He said, "Now, Mama McKee would get into their behind. She didn't like for them to be on their phones, and the preacher's up preaching." So it was just really a good tribute, and you know, and old school. I got a chance to provide dinner for the entire family on last Friday night. Rev and I took dinner over there, and then of course I created the video, you know, did my old social media stuff for that. But just that whole powerful moment of the legacy being passed on, whether you're prepared or not. God is still going to be God, you know, and that was just amazing. So I just wanted to start with that.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that, and we will keep your friend and her family in prayer.
Yeah.
Because people think, you know, after I try to get people to understand, after the funeral, you know, for the people that are left, you know, sometimes it's just like silence. Because there's all of the hubbub before the funeral. There's a hubbub during the funeral and just immediately after. But then after everybody goes home.
The healing really begins. And it's
And, you know, you got to remember to be there for those people, you know, after, you know, the funeral, just to make sure that they're okay, that, you know, the coming down from all of that isn't so hard. And that they know that they're still supported, and it's not just, you know, at the time of the passing, but, you know, from there on.
Yeah, so. Yeah. The healing really begins. You know, and next, Gretchen, I want to talk about another woman, and that's Brittany Griner. And I want Brittany Griner to come home. She pled guilty in court yesterday. And said that she didn't mean to break the law. She was packing in a hurry and added that. And I want to talk about, well, what does that mean? And I really don't know, except for she's now pled guilty. And they will extend the hearing now. The next date is July 14th. And Brittany Griner has now been in jail behind bars since May, almost 140 days. And the one thing that I know to be true is that Putin is an ugly man, and there is no democracy in Russia, and this will be drawn out, and Brittany Griner will more than likely be a pawn in the negotiations with the United States for whatever they want. Biden and Harris, as of yesterday, talked to Brittany Griner's wife for the first time. But there are more detainees over there that have been there since 2018. Brittany Griner was over there in 2022. And even the family of the detainee from 2018, they raised their head yesterday and said, well, you know, Biden and Harris hasn't called us. You know, well, you know, and we want Brittany to go free, but why haven't, you know, so it's really a vicious, you know, amazing circle. And I don't know if I see a solution that is viable for the Russians to just let her go. I don't see that happening. There will be some negotiations, and I see more time for Brittany. I can see her still there this time next year.
Part of me is just wondering, okay, who advised her? Was that the smart choice, right choice? To plead like that, that's a little bothersome to me. You know, I mean, my thing is you fight until, you know, you can't fight anymore. That I'm just not sure if if that was the way to go. But you know, you don't know all of the circumstances. So
yeah, it had to be. I agree with you, Gretchen. Someone had to say to her, "Hey, we think this is the best route to get some leniency, and that is to plead guilty for less than a gram, a half a gram of whatever kind of vaping material she had, less than a gram." And she wrote a letter to President Biden, which was revealed a couple of days ago, and she said, "None of the protection of who I am to America or me wearing the United States on my chest as I play for the U.S. in the Olympics, none of the protection of my family or my wife or my friends or my team can help me now. I need help from you, President Biden. You're the first president I've ever voted for. This is the first election that I've ever voted for." And she talked about that in her letter. Powerful and sad, Gretchen. Powerful and sad.
Yeah, but the thing that's even, to me, even more sad or just as sad is the fact that she had to go overseas to be recognized for her talents in the first place, you know. And it seems to me that especially with African-American athletes, or African-American entertainers, you know, any African-American that is worth their salt, you know, that's trying to make it big. And I shouldn't say any, but quite a few. I mean, look at Josephine Baker. I mean, there's a lot of people that have taken their talents overseas because they were much more appreciated than they were when they were here.
Yeah.
I guess if you're not working in someone's house or restaurant or hotel, you're not all that appreciated. And then even if you are doing that, you're still not all that appreciated.
Well, you know, I'm going to veer off a little bit here, Gretchen, in that she was definitely well-known here. You know, she played for Baylor in college, and they won a national championship with Kim Mulkey, and she was the MVP of March Madness that year for women's college basketball, and then she was drafted and got notoriety for some negative things. But Brittany Griner was well-known here, and that team, the Phoenix Mercury, they're making great strides. You know, they have Brittany Griner now on their court. There's Brittany Griner Day. If you've never seen it, bring Brittany Griner home .org. It's beautiful, and they're doing awesome things, and every WNBA team is trying to do what they're doing. The problem is that female professional basketball players in the United States, the average is $200,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
LeBron James makes $1 million every game, almost. He's or more than that, $1 million every game. And there's 82 games a season, and he makes more than $1 million every game. So that's the disparity. And if WNBA players want that finer life, $200,000 is just not enough, and they can go overseas to Europe and Spain and Russia and play for $300,000, $400,000, $500,000, $600,000 in 2 or 3 months, and come back and then play in the WNBA for $200,000, but have a better life. And that's what a lot of professional players do. They play here for the season, and then they go overseas, you know, around Christmas time through what Brittany Griner was doing in May. And they were told to come home. They were told to come home because the war was about to start, and they knew it. And all of them made it out except for two or three. But Brittany Griner was the only one that was detained.
Mm.
And she was detained for that.
And now, because I listen to you, but see, this is the thing. You are very involved in the sports world, which I am not. We talk about that often, how, you know, you pay more attention to sports and games, and I pay more attention to movies and other stuff. You know, that's just us.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing about it is, like, for example, on TV, they will talk about, it's the NBA draft, and there's all of this hype before the NBA
mm-hmm.
draft. And even me as a non-watcher knows, you know, it's time for the NBA draft. I don't see all of that hype with WNBA. Okay?
Oh,
that's my issue. It's like I would like to see the equal amount of hype for WNBA as well as NBA. And all of those
women's
professional
leagues. You should have
seen the draft,
Gretchen, for the WNBA. It was just as amount of hype, and they had a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful facility, program, and just as much, you know, social interest on the family and interviews. And so you're right. I would say 5 years ago, I would be right here in that camp with you. But now it has come up to the level, the whole draft thing, the process and the ceremony behind it, and all of the coaches that coached them in college there in that room, and how many they invite. And so it has come up to that level as far as the draft is concerned.
Is it the same, like, for example, they interrupt regular programming sometime on major networks to cover some of these things for the men.
Yeah.
I don't see it as much for the women.
Then you know what? I think because you don't travel in that sports world,
and that's exactly what I'm saying. I don't travel in that sports world.
It's there for women now.
Yeah. Now it may be there, but what I'm saying in terms of the hyping, the promotion for it, I'm not saying that the celebrations are not happening, but the promotion for it just seems to be lacking, because like I said, for me, that's not a sports person except for, you know, certain things, except for maybe football season and the actual game itself. The other stuff that surrounds that, I don't see the type of hype for women, with the exception of tennis now. I see a little bit more of that.
I think WNBA exceeds the hype for tennis. And I'm going to have to start sharing. I think it exceeds
you're gonna have
that.
To start.
I'm going to start sharing some of that on G's Power Hour.
Cool.
The fact, too, that ESPN has its own, you know, platform and website. And I know it's been probably more than 5, maybe 10 years ago. But ESPN started something called ESPNW. And it is specifically just for, you know, accomplishments of women in sports, and it is powerful too. So I'm gonna start sharing some of that. But the WNBA, and where it is now,
that takes me right back, though, Princess. I'm sorry. It takes me right back to, why does there have to be a special channel for women?
We asked for
And that's good. That's good. But what I'm saying is, why can't the main channel? You know, everybody knows that, you know, ESPN, period. Everybody knows, like, if you are around here locally, I don't even watch ESPN that much, but I think ESPN is on Spectrum on Channel 29. Okay. I know that, you know, and I don't even watch. But my thing is, why can't the one ESPN channel be shared equally by men and women? Why do you have to have a special channel designated just for the women? If that's what it takes right now, that's fine. But I would like to see a little bit more integration of men and women's sports.
I think maybe I jumped the gun, and I love ESPNW, but I need you just to – I'm going to challenge you and the listeners too that don't watch ESPN to watch it in a day. I think we are well represented on ESPN, which is on 24/7, and I think we're represented on the media side and the reporters and the anchors. It is going leap and bounds, but not just in that. The stories every day, a complete involvement in women. So I don't think there needs to be a bigger integration. I think it's there. I think the integration now is not for us to be satisfied with the integration and the popularity and the notoriety, but or the exposure. But now pay it, you know. There needs to be equal pay. And that's the last struggle, I think, is definitely equal pay. But as a matter of fact, I posted not too long ago, probably last week, that the national championship for softball was 1 week, about 2 weeks ago, and then the national championship for baseball, college baseball, was the following week. Oklahoma Sooners won for the national championship in women's softball. The Ole Miss Rebels won for college baseball. And there was a wonderful story behind both. But I said all that to say the biggest share – of millions of people who watch more college softball than they did baseball. And that was celebrated that, you know, hey, here we are. As a matter of fact, they move a national hockey game, you know, during the hockey playoffs. They moved it to a better primetime location and took away the women's gymnastics for college. They moved that to a different time because they thought hockey was going to bring in more. But in actuality, the national championship for gymnastics for women brought in more viewership on NBC than a playoff game for hockey. So it tells you that women have moved the needle. And they are there, and the exposure is there. We just got to get the GMs and the men who are running this country to understand and pay us for more and not to think that all of us are meant to stay at home and take care of babies and cook bread and have dinner ready at 6 o'clock. We are more than that. And you and I are perfect examples of that. We can do it all.
Okay. Speaking of sports and speaking of hockey, want to extend congratulations to Mike Greer, who is the first black general manager in the history of the National Hockey League. So wanted to mention that because that's not, I have to say, that's not one of the sports that's at the top of my list, but I appreciate the work and the accomplishment. And he's 47 years old. So
yeah. Yeah, congratulations to him. And hockey is another one of those sports is not not something that you see a lot of African Americans participate in. He is the first GM. I hope it gets to the point where we don't have, you know, have these major announcements because there's so many of us that are doing that. Congratulations to the Colorado Avalanche for just winning the Stanley Cup, the national championship for national hockey. And before that, the Tampa Bay Lightning had won two in a row. So, and they were in the finals again this year, but lost to the Colorado Avalanche. But Mike Greer, amen. Congratulations to you. And Gretchen, while we're on that, and I know we're going a lot, gosh, a young man from HBCU World graduate just purchased all 93 of the Fuddruckers chain of hamburgers. And I don't know if you know Fuddruckers
I know it because they just closed one that they opened one that's relatively down the street from me and then they closed it. And I was not happy because I remember Fuddruckers opening when I was, I want to say in college, but it might have been shortly after that. So that's a long time ago. There's one that opened near University of South Florida in Tampa. So when they opened one in Orlando, I was pleasantly surprised and I was really disappointed when they closed. So, and I don't eat a lot of red meat. But, you know, it comes and goes in spurts. But I love a good burger. So, yes, I'm appreciative of that. Hopefully they'll bring it back here.
Yes. I wanted to give his name. It's now Nicholas Perkins. It has paid $18.5 million for 93 locations. So he is the new owner of Fuddruckers, and he owns all of them. All of 92, he owns all of them. So I'm excited to see what that brings, you know, for him. He's 40 years old, a North Carolina native, and he owns
says he's a Howard University alum here. Yes.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep. How about
good
that?
For him.
Congratulations, sir.
Yes, congratulations. Yay, but I'm happy now. I love Fuddruckers, so I'm really happy. I'm just hoping that we can get them back open and off the ground, and I hope he does well. Yay.
The location here in Columbia closed, too. It closed down probably 3 or 4 months ago. That was one of Reverend Robinson's go-to places.
He can eat beef
every day. I'm not a beef eater like that. As a matter of fact, I'm not a meat eater like that. But John, he loved Fuddruckers, and you know, he knew when he went, he knew what I liked from there, and he would get it. I hope that he keeps the concept, but enhances and makes it better. But congratulations,
yes, I hope so too.
Because I love to see it. I love to see
because
that.
I know they got away from some of the stuff that I remember from the first Fuddruckers I ever went to. But they still, for the most part, you know, I'm all I'm I guess I've gotten a little bit spoiled, or my tastes have changed when it comes to burgers. So if it's not a burger that's cooked at home, then I've really started to move away from the chain, not all the chains, but some of the chain burgers that have more bun than burger. Let me just put it like that. I like a good, juicy, well-seasoned, and not overcooked and not undercooked burger. And I know that's kind of hard. But, I like a place to ask me how do I want my burger, because then I have a little bit more control over, you know, what I'm eating. Versus the ones that kind of just generate it with the plastic wrap on it and stuff. So, yes, good. Yeah. I'm looking forward to that. I am looking forward to that. I want to see if I can, if there's an investment that I can make in it.
Yeah, you know, I hope that in there are public shares. I would buy some stock in Fuddruckers now.
I would too.
You know, So I'll have to look that up and post that too. But, yeah, congratulations to Nicholas Perkins, a grad of HBCU Howard University, and he now owns all 92 locations.
Yes. Going to have to post that, and I'm going to have to write him and ask about the investment aspect of this. Definitely want to see that succeed. God bless him. So, anyway, we're going to go ahead, because we still got a lot to talk about, and it's almost close to the top of the hour, and I think if we start another conversation on another subject, we will just blow right past it. So let's get this thing paid for. I'm here with CEO of Never Had It So Good Entertainment, Princess Cooper. This is G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. By the way, you can join the conversation by calling 516-387-1944. G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. We'll be right back.
Does it appear the long arm of the law is working against you instead of for you? Whom do you call when the boys in blue are pursuing you? When the wrong person behind bars may end up being you? With over 40 years combined legal expertise, Anderson & Welch bring to bear a smart, sound, sensible defense of those caught in what may be the unrelenting grip of the legal system. Turn to Anderson & Welch first to get ahead of trouble, not fall into it, by calling 561-832-3386. That's 561-832-3386. That's Anderson & Welch Law Firm online at andersonandwelch.com.
Sorry, y'all. I had to get a bite of my leftover red, white, and blue dessert from Independence Day. Anyway, welcome back to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G, here with CEO of Never Had It So Good Entertainment, Princess Cooper. And if you want to join the conversation, you have a topic you want to bring up, the number is 516-387-1944. So I know one of the things I wanted to mention is, I guess, a sentencing today for Derek Chauvin. For those that may have been hiding under a rock, Derek Chauvin was the man convicted for the killing of George Floyd in Minneapolis. And so today he is federal sentencing set for today. So this doesn't seem like, you know, I guess a lot of the initial, I guess you could say hype or whatever, the initial fervor over the whole thing with Derek Chauvin and George Floyd kind of subsided. Have we forgotten? You know, is it just that this is not as important, or is it that we feel that enough justice has been done, and has enough justice been done, or will it ever be enough?
The amount of, what am I looking for? Because I don't want to use concern. It was way bigger than that. The amount of heartache and hurt that we felt during every one of those seconds that his knee was on George Floyd's neck was amazing. And we were amazed in the era of what, I think that was 2020, that this happened. The trial was in 2021. the fact that this is still going on in 2022 is amazing. Mm-hmm. It was the fact that it was in 2020. So I don't know if the attention on it has definitely lost its fervor, but it is not, I don't think it's lost on any of us as African-Americans in the culture or even in media. I don't think it's lost on any of us how disrespectful Chauvin was and how how less of us he thought. You know, he thought of us, and I'm speaking of all of us as African-Americans, as animals or as not a person, because he wouldn't have done that unless he thought that. He really has been patrolling the streets of Minnesota all of those years, and treating us like dirt. And it all came out with George Floyd. And Lord have mercy, somebody had to lose their life and be filmed doing it before we realize that we have that type of person walking on this earth. It's not lost on me, and I hope whatever federal charges he's going through right now, that they pile on and that he dies in prison. That's still less than what he gave George Floyd.
Mm-hmm. So according to this is abcnews.go.com, in April 2021, he was found guilty of 3 counts in Floyd's death, second-degree unintentional murder, third-degree murder, and second-degree manslaughter for pressing his knee against Floyd's neck for more than 9 minutes. He's been sentenced to 270 months minus time served, and says this equals about 22 and a half years in prison. So the plea agreement for the federal charges, according to this article, call for a 20 to 25-year sentence. So I don't know, and because I haven't really delved into it enough to catch up, I don't know if that's to be served, whatever it is, concurrently or subsequently, you know, after the original thing. And then the other officers, let's see, J. Alexander Kung, Thomas Lane, and Tu Tao were charged in their role, and they said they pleaded not guilty but were convicted by a jury. And let's see, Tao and Kung await a state trial for the charges of aiding and abetting in the murder and aiding and abetting in manslaughter and Floyd's death. And their trial is scheduled to start on October 24th. The third guy, Thomas Lane, he pleaded guilty to those. And I think it says under the agreement, a sentence of 36 months or 3 years in prison is going to be recommended by the prosecutors. So that's where that whole thing stands with regards to Mr. Floyd's death. I'm one of the things I have to say, though, I'm with all of the stuff that happened in the last couple of years, including COVID, I'm glad this didn't get lost in the sauce, so to speak. You know, there was COVID really kind of redirected a lot of our focus on ourselves, on our kids, in their education, and rightly so. But I'm just glad that this case didn't get lost in all of that, having, you know, attention having to be redirected and people having to rework their lives, you know, that this still garnered enough attention, some form of justice was served.
So. Justice has been served. The only thing better would be, you know, the death penalty, you know. And again, look at how smart Derek Chauvin's legal team was. Every piece of land and all of his bank accounts, including mm-hmm. his home, all of that was sold or given to his wife and taken out of his name, so no one could get a civil suit and get a dime. They did that first,
mm-hmm.
The trial ever came to court, to the court day. They did that first.
because otherwise, even after the criminal suit, there would have been a civil suit. But he made sure to save and give all of his wealth to his wife and get it out of his name, because they knew, just in case, here, let's take care of business. And you can't tell me that he didn't take his views, his approach to life. I've been married to a police officer. You can't help but to bring some of that home. And mm-hmm. if nothing else, you definitely bring your views home and how you feel about it. And of course, his family knew how he felt about mm-hmm. black people. You can't help. If you're willing to do that, you're willing to treat us like anything.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope he gets whatever he gets.
That's one thing, though, that when you said that, it brought something to my mind. I think not necessarily the next time we have Paul Shelton on, because he's coming on tomorrow, so not quite prepared for that. But I think I want to have Paul Shelton talk to us about protecting our assets, because not everybody is that kind of savvy. Like you said, he had a good attorney.
Hmm.
You know, he had good, mm-hmm. good advice. Not everybody is that savvy in terms of knowing how to protect their assets, you know, in any situation, whether it's – and the reason I say that, it's not like, you know, I want you to protect your assets because you may be going to jail. We've talked about before when I talk about real estate how, you know, as you get older, if, you know, if you ever have to go into a nursing home, you know, you mm-hmm. may end up not losing control of some of your assets. So
that's right.
I think one of the things that I want to do is ask Paul next time he's, you know, we get a chance, is to talk about how to protect our assets. So thank you for bringing that up, because, I mean, that's something that I do remember that happening then, but, you know, it's something that we don't think about on a normal basis.
That's right. And I would say, I would take that even further, Gretchen. Some of us wouldn't do that. Some of us wouldn't turn all of our assets over to a spouse. We'll take them on the jail with us. So,
mm-hmm.
or to
our grave. Yeah.
There you go. There you
yeah.
go. We have yeah. to learn to be more savvy when it comes to our financial affairs. And that is one of the prime examples to me.
Yeah, for sure. So today is the day for Chauvin's sentencing for the federal charges. So we just kind of have to wait and see. I don't know exactly when that's going to happen. From the last thing I checked, it had not happened as of yet. So I'm sure that when that happens, they'll be on the news this evening. So we'll just kind of have to keep watch of that. So let's talk about the shooting in Ohio. Oh, well, goodness gracious. I want to talk about that, I guess, a little bit, but I just also want to talk about the continued shootings in Chicago or in the Chicago area. You know, I'm not sure how, you know, we as a country are supposed to respond to what's going on in one city in our country, but I mean, I'm hoping that it's disturbing, but I'm hoping this is not a sign of a trend that is going to be occurring in other urban areas of our country. I would hate to see that. But I would like someone to come up with some sort of explanation or some sort of solution in terms of how we stop all of this violence in, you know, this city, this one city in our country, who it just seems like it has a history of violence anyway. When you talk about, I mean, you hear about, you know, Chicago gangsters and all that kind of stuff. It, you know, how do we change the tide in a city like that? Especially because this all affects, and it affects everybody, but unfortunately, it seems like these things affect African Americans more so than anybody else.
Yep.
I had my friend on who's a professor at Northwestern. She talked about, you know, fortunately it didn't result in violence, but she talked about the incident involving her son and the ramifications and the subsequent effects that that had on her and her family. I just really wish someone would come up and say, okay, you know, let's pull the reins here. Let's really have a thorough examination of this. How do we stop it? How do we not let it spread? You know, and how do we not be, I guess, oblivious or, I can't think of the word, but just not affected by what's going on. Because, you know, or just oblivious. I want us to be a little bit more sensitive to what's going on there. I want us to pay attention, because if we're not careful, this will destroy that city, but it'll also find its way to other areas. You know.
Well, Gretchen, the violence, and especially the black-on-black crime in Chicago, just didn't start this year or
no.
Post-pandemic. It's been going on for quite some time. Even as President Obama was running for president, a lot of these issues come up. And I think, mm-hmm. too, that we as African-Americans can't be so upset with how police officers treat us. We treat ourselves like that.
Yes.
Now, is it
exactly.
a sense of hopelessness in our communities? I know a lot of my college roommates and professional people in my circle that have come out of hopeless neighborhoods and done well. So we have to look at ourselves and try to
mm-hmm.
encourage and go back and help and reach back and create programs. And the fact that President Obama has his presidential library being constructed there, the fact that he has his nonprofit there and has hired so many within the community to try to come up out of that community is one of the ways. But we have to continue to reach back, look back, help back, and understand and let our people know we can't do better until we help ourselves. But black-on-black crime is real, and
mm-hmm.
we can't get upset at the Chauvins of the world when we are doing this on a daily basis. You know, 4th of July weekend, you know, 10 shootings and 8 killed at picnics and that. We have now said that the best way to solve any conflict and have conflict resolution is through gun ownership and using a gun violence. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, and that's not altogether true. People got to stop thinking that this is all just a singular issue, and it's all of these superficial issues. Because the reason I say that is until we go back to basics in terms of valuing life in general, valuing yourself, valuing other people, and stop worrying about the standards that other people hold for you, okay, because they're not necessarily right, you know. We've got to make sure that we stay focused in terms of what our value is to ourselves and what our value is to God and what our value is to society as a whole. Okay, and that
mm-hmm.
means that you have to stop trying to make strides that other people think you should make at all costs. Okay, and the reason I say that is we especially, and we talk about race, but let's also talk about income. Let's talk about wages. Let's talk about finances. Okay, don't expect, if you're not a millionaire, you know, if you're not making that money, don't expect to live at same standard as someone else. Now, you can make strides to get there, but you have to be strategic and you have to be patient in order to get there, okay? And we got to stop doing the shortcuts. We got to stop cheating each other. We got to stop cheating other people to get where we think we should be. Okay, we've got to stop the robbing and the killing and all of that other stuff to try to get where we should be, because half the time we're not successful in some of that stuff anyway. We have a lot of stupid criminals running around out there, and all they're doing is you know, getting an easy pass to jail. Got to stop it.
Huh.
We have to learn that if we don't have the million-dollar house, it's okay. It's okay. All right, because that's not all about who we are. But if it's important to you, then you have to have a game plan. There are criminals out there that are smart, and I would like to see those people take their smarts and apply it in a more positive and constructive way. Okay? And like you said, going back, using those smarts and that intelligence to go back and help people in their families and in their communities and in society as a whole. Okay? We have to change our way of thinking. We have to change our way of how we feel about ourselves and about our families and about our friends and about our neighbors. There's a revolution that has to happen in terms of how we, you know, how we act, how we take what we get and how we use it and how we apply it. It's not going to happen overnight. And that's one of the things, too. We have to stop expecting everything to happen in an instant. That is part of the big problem right there. We expect there's a commercial, there's a song, I want it all, and I want it now. That can't always happen. And we got to stop expecting that. You know, our parents, you know, they were planners, you know. And I think, you can have some balance. I think, you know, what Dr. Hobbs, we were talking yesterday about the workaholics and everything. It's a matter of having a balanced approach to your life. You got to stop. You got to start planning, but you also have to include a little spontaneity in there as well. So it has to be balanced. And stop expecting perfection, you know, and stop succumbing to peer pressure. Do the best that you can, you know.
Well, you know, Gretchen, I think that's a word across the board is that, and several things. Freedom is not free. And this generation and maybe even the generation before us, or even those who don't want to work hard, think that success is microwavable. It is not. It is consistency, planning and making goals and attaining those goals and working hard and outworking the next person. That's success. That's ownership. That's financial success. That's all of that. But, you know, I think there is a great amount of youngsters that are behind us and the generation behind us or even that generation behind them that are doing wonderful, great things. But there are a lot of us who feel that we should be able to post a video on YouTube and become an instant millionaire. No, every now and then, youngsters, that happens. But for the most part, you're going to have to get out and devise a plan and work that plan and work your business and work your career and make it that way. It is not instantaneous. 99% of those who are wealthy, it is not instantaneous. You know, Twitter, Google, and Instagram and Facebook are the anomalies. Other than that, you know, even Bezos, who owns Amazon, he started out in this garage. You're going to have to work.
Definitely, you got to do the work, and the thing about it is you have to be patient and discerning and take your time and not expect to have the same success as someone else. I think that's the thing is this comparison thing. You know, everybody wants to be like Bezos or everybody wants to be like Oprah or whatever. In the Bible, they talk about all of the different gifts. Same spirit, different gifts. So you may not be gifted in the area that Oprah is in or the area that Bezos is in or anybody else. You need to take the time to discover the gifts that God gave you and enhance those and apply those. You know, stop trying to be someone else. Be you, but be your best you. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, don't squander the gift that you were given. You know, figure it out. So.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Well, Gretchen, we got about 10 minutes left. I really want to get in a couple of things.
Okay.
And one of those things I want to spend to, because I really want to get to Adam Kinzinger. But I wanted to say congratulations to Melody Hobson. She's going to be the first black female to be an NFL owner. She has partnered with a young man from the Waltons, of course, who own Walmart, and he will be an owner of the Denver Broncos. They are now, of course, finalizing that deal. But Melody, I don't know why I'm having a hard time
saying
Melody
Hobson,
today.
Is it the financial advisor that used to be on Good Morning America? Is that the one?
You know what? I've heard something about that, but she made her wealth in Chicago with the Economic Club and also with Starbucks. You know, so, and she came out of Princeton University, but I didn't remember the Morning America.
She's going married to George Lucas.
You know what? She sure is.
Yep,
she sure is.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I did not know. Yeah.
She is the new first female, black female NFL owner. So congratulations to her. Yeah. Yeah, Denver Broncos. I mean, there were a lot of people. Magic Johnson was trying to buy the team. There were several different African Americans, and I really thought they were going to sell to, gosh, the GM of the team now, who actually quarterback for them. I can't remember John's name. I want to say, well, I can't remember his name, and that's crazy. But I thought they were going to sell to him, but no, they sold to this group here, which now gives us a minority owner in the NFL. Amazing, the first one. There are no black men that own a team. First female that's black will own a team, for sure.
Good
Amen.
For her. I
Yeah, I
used to watch her on, when she was on Good Morning America and all that kind of stuff. So good for her.
They purchased a team for $4.65 billion, the Denver Broncos. Congratulations to Melody Hobson. Okay, so Gretchen, I wanted
to
talk about Adam
Let's
Kinzinger and the fact that, you know, wow. And I don't consider myself a Republican or a Democrat, and I voted for both, and I try to really get to understand the issues and the platform of every candidate that I want to vote for, and I vote for what their platform and how I think it will affect the world or the community or any of that. But I listened to an audio he put out, and Adam Kinzinger is one of two Republicans on the January 6th committee, chosen by Nancy Pelosi. And Kinzinger has decided that he's not going to run for reelection because he didn't feel that he will win that. But he's getting a lot of blowback, considered a rhino now, which means Republican in name only. But he released an audio, and listeners, if you haven't heard it, please go and listen to it. And it talks about, and it just gives a synopsis about five or six different people, one woman, about five or six men, and they are sending threats through a voicemail. And I hope that the FBI and the Department of Justice has some type of voice recognition and find all of them. They threaten him. They call him everything from MF to the C word. There was so much. But they all threatened to come to his house. They all threatened that they were going to get him and his kids. And one of the men, all old white men, said, you keep your mouth shut. This is Trump's world. Keep your mouth shut, you MF.
Mm-hmm.
I talked to Reverend Robinson this morning. I told him how shocked I was that this is America. This is the mentality of anybody in this world. And he laughed. He said, that is the old South there for sure. Rearing his head, to put it lightly, because I can't say everything he said. But I wanted to bring this up, Gretchen, because I am surprised at the soul of some of our people, some of our humans in this world.
It's sad. It really is sad. And the thing about it is that I again go back, you know, and I hate to criticize, but I again go back and say, where are our church leaders? You know, where are our, let me say, spiritual leaders? Just because you're in church doesn't mean you're a spiritual person, okay?
There you go.
So let me just say that. Where are our spiritual leaders? Because we keep going off on so many different tangents, and we really need some spiritual guidance to pull us back and point us in the right direction. Seriously, I can't emphasize that enough. Somebody that because apparently, and we can tell by all of the increase in shootings in our country and everything, that it's not being taught in some homes as much as it should be. Definitely not taught in the schools, you know, in terms of having some sort of sense of responsibility, self-respect, respect toward other people, some sort of moral conscience or some sort of compass, you know. And if we don't have people that are rooted in you know, spirituality to kind of step forward and say, that's wrong. People are afraid to say, that's wrong. You know, people are afraid to say, that's wrong. And someone needs to step up and say, that's wrong.
Yeah.
And, you know, consequences be, you know what?
But not only do our African American spiritual leaders need to step up, but more people that look like, yeah, I know you're not, but more people that look like them need to speak up and step up, like the Adam Kinzigers of the world, who said, I'm a Republican, but decency is decency. Right is right. And
yes,
Donald Trump does not deserve for us to follow him and to uphold him in this mess. America before foolishness. And I'm not I wasn't a fan of either one, Liz Cheney or him, per se, in their politics. I love their journey and their plight and how they got to where they are. And Adam Kinzinger was a Navy SEAL or Green Beret in the military before he came out and ran for government. He has more fight in him and, you know, for this country than Donald Trump, and we're following Donald Trump like he's the Messiah. And you're right, spiritual leaders need to follow. But the men that I heard in this audio were old, and they should be our born leaders, you know, our leaders that are leaving a legacy, and their souls are sold to whoever. I'm amazed, but you're correct. Of all denominations and cultures need to speak up our spiritual leaders. But some of these politicians, and I know how dirty and maniacal that maybe politics can be, but in this instance, we should not be threatening anybody's family and children.
No.
And so bold with it.
Crazy. And the thing about it is, when I talk about the spiritual leaders stepping up, we got to get back to, and no one wants to hear this, no one at all, we got to get back to sacrificing, okay? We got to get back to sacrificing, because that's what it's going to take. It's unfortunate, you know, but we have a tendency to learn things the hard way in this country sometimes, and it's going to take some sacrificing to start putting our country back on the right track. And our people are back on the right track. So,
yeah.
Princess, again, thank you for your time. Really appreciate it. You have a blessed day.
We talked so much, only one commercial break. Thank you, Anderson Law and Kevin Anderson.
Yeah. Yes, thank you, Kevin. Tomorrow we have Palsy Shelton of Warwickshire. He's coming on. We're also going to have the person that's in charge of Unity of Eatonville, and we're going to have Debbie and Nadir on tomorrow, so we got a full day. Don't miss it. Thank you for joining us. This has been G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thank you. Be well, be safe, be blessed, and please remember, all real power comes from God. Take care. We'll be right back.
gonna make it all right.